I lived in Mississauga at the time. School was in Peterborough. And I was dating a young lady who was a nurse at Trillium Hospital in Mississauga. And we were talking about getting married. Now you have to understand, Bible college actually has another name. They call it bridal college. You enter first year single, you graduate fourth year married. And it was true. By my entering my fourth year, all my friends were married from first year. So this young lady and I are talking about getting married. We're both in our mid-20s. And I go to school. She stays in Mississauga. I go to Peterborough. And one day, this thought hits me. Is this the right person for me to marry? Thought goes away. Next day, hits me again. Lasts for a couple of minutes. Goes away. Within 2 weeks, the thought wouldn't go away. Has anyone here ever had an obsessive thought? A thought you cannot control? A thought you cannot stop? Morning, noon, and night, all I could think about was whether or not I should marry this person. And I started to experience symptoms I had never had before. Headaches. I had never before had headaches, and I was having pounding headaches. I used to get this choking sensation in my throat. I was getting chest pains so bad that if it wasn't for the fact that I was 24 years old and in quite decent shape, I probably would have been taking myself to the hospital. I was getting shortness of breath. Has anyone ever experienced shortness of breath? And we get that because of the fight or flight response that we're experiencing. Nausea was my worst symptom. I felt sick to my stomach all the time. My hands would shake, my body would tremble. I felt filled with fear. I felt easily overwhelmed. I felt like I was losing my mind. And I did the only thing I could think to do. I ended the relationship. Didn't want to, but I saw it as my only way out. Now, anxiety and depression, if you deal with the original cause of the anxiety and depression, sometimes that makes it go away. Sometimes it doesn't. And why doesn't it? Because sometimes the anxiety and depression have taken on a life of its own. I call it the fear of fear, where you're actually afraid of your anxiety or you're afraid of your depression. And the reason why being afraid of anxiety is so tricky is fear is the underlying cause of all anxiety. So to fear anxiety will make you anxious. And it's a self-feeding cycle. To fear depression can make you depressed. Self-feeding cycle. So I thought I'd get better when I ended the relationship. I didn't. I actually probably got worse, because now I've cut someone out of my life that I really cared about. I start to see counselors. I'm about a month and a half into my struggle. And the first counselor I see is Dr. Bob Johnson at our college. He's a clinical psychologist. And one Monday morning, I really, of all the things I struggled with anxiety and depression, what was the worst for me was the obsessive thoughts. That was the worst part for me. And on a Monday morning at 8 a.m., I'm sitting in the hallway waiting to go see Dr. Johnson in his office. And my obsessive thoughts were so bad at that moment, I wanted to start banging my head against the concrete wall just like that one and make them stop. I walk into his office. He says, "Good morning. How was your weekend?" And I turned to him and I said, "Do they still do lobotomies?" A 24-year-old young man just inquired about a lobotomy. His response, I'll never forget it. He said, "There might be a few things we might want to try before we go for a frontal lobotomy." I said, "Okay." So we spent the next 2 months talking about my relationship with my parents and my siblings. Nice man. really nice man. Didn't help me a lick. Started to see a second counselor, third counselor. Nice people. Didn't help me. I somehow graduated from that school, moved back to Mississauga to live with my mom, and to see a fourth therapist. This one was $70 an hour. Now, $70 an hour in 1990 was at the low end, but it was still in the range. Today, $70 an hour for therapy is considered charity. A psychologist will cost you anywhere from $150 to $250 an hour. I saw a psychologist last month twice for something I wanted to deal with in my life, not anxiety or depression related, just some issues. $200 an hour. Is it worth it to see a therapist or psychologist for that kind of money? If you're getting better, absolutely it is. Folks, people will spend unending amounts of money on their physical health, yet they won't spend money on their mental health. I know a lady who just died of cancer, and her husband had gone to Germany once she was diagnosed for these new treatments that weren't being offered in Canada. They went there four or five times and paid out of pocket. They probably spent $100,000 trying to find a cure for her cancer, which unfortunately they never did. So don't be afraid to spend a little money on your mental health. It's important too. So I'm a year into my struggle. I'm a mess. I'm sleeping 14 hours a day. Why? When I was asleep, I didn't feel terrible. I'm up late watching TV one night in a fit of despair, wondering how I'm going to get up and face another day. And this TV show comes on, and they have a doctor and a psychologist and a psychiatrist explaining about something called anxiety disorder. Never heard of the term. Clinical depression, I'd heard of that. Panic attacks, hadn't heard of that. And bottom line is, at the end of the show, they offered 16 cassette tapes. I asked for it in 8-track, but they didn't have it. 16 cassette tapes for $430. That's 1991 money. What's that today? $600-$700? I bought them. It's the only thing I've ever bought off television. Never bought anything off television since. They came to me. I started to listen to them. And within a month, my panic attacks had stopped and my depression had gone away. Within 2 months, my generalized anxiety was probably 50% better. And at the end of the third month, I was probably 90% better for my generalized anxiety. No panic attacks, no depression. I was great. When I graduated from theology school, not only could I not be a minister like all my friends went off to do, I couldn't attend church. I had panic attacks in church. It was very difficult to apply for positions as a pastor when you have to say in the interview, and by the way, I can't come in your church. Kind of puts a wrench in the whole thing, doesn't it? So I went back to church once I'd finished that program, and I became a minister. And I worked as a minister for 2 years at Mississauga Community Church. And while I was pastoring, I was in the people that had written the program that I went through got a hold of me and told me they would like me to represent them in Canada. So they hired me, they trained me, and my job was to give 100 seminars a year across Canada, the United States, and Great Britain. Folks, I have 3 simple objectives for this morning. Number one, help you to understand you're not alone. 20% of the Canadian population struggles with anxiety or depression. It's 2 out of every 10 people. The second thing I want to do is help you understand why you feel the way you do, why you have these symptoms we talk about. And third, coping strategies. I teach coping strategies that put you in control of your thoughts and your emotions and your symptoms. Let's start off by talking about the four main reasons people have anxiety and depression. Reason number one, genetics. This condition runs in families. My brother has also had problems with anxiety and depression. My sister hasn't. She's adopted. Biochemical. What does biochemical mean? Two things. One, the power of a thought to produce chemicals inside of your mind and your body. Do you know that your emotions are basically chemicals flowing through your body? Let me prove this to you. Would you be so kind as to sit back, relax, and close your eyes? Imagine going to your local grocery store. Go over to the fresh produce section. Pick up a nice, big, juicy, yellow lemon. Take your lemon home. Put it on your counter. Cut it in half with a sharp knife. Cut it again into quarters. Pick up a quarter of that lemon. Bring it to your mouth. Open as wide as you can. And squeeze that sucker for all you're worth. Filling your entire mouth with lemon juice. Go ahead and bite down on it. Now open your eyes. Does anyone have more moisture in your mouth right now than you did 2 minutes ago? There are no lemons in this room. I was actually in Halifax one night giving a seminar, and a lady pulls a bag of lemons out of her purse. Okay. You travel with lemons. And folks, the brain doesn't know the difference between imagining something happening and it actually happening. There's a term we call anticipatory anxiety, when someone's anticipating something they're worried about. The truth is, the brain is an exaggerator. It makes bad things out to be worse than they really are. Who here has ever had something they were worried about, and when it actually happened, it wasn't nearly as bad as you thought it would be? Yeah, the brain is an exaggerator. So the next time you feel worried or afraid of something, remind yourself of that. My brain is making this out to be worse than it really is. And actually, you see, when you're worrying, you're just spinning your wheels. When you have to actually do it, you get consumed by what you're doing, and before you know it, you're halfway done. So worrying about it is actually worse than having to do it. The other biochemical aspect is people ask me all the time, they say, Mike, do I have a chemical imbalance in my brain? The answer is, maybe. Some people do, and that's where medication can be very helpful. Medication for anxiety and depression can be very, very helpful. When I was coaching people, the odd time I'd have someone that we couldn't make much headway with them until we got them on a medication. And then when we got them on a medication, they started to do really well. Whether you use medication or not, you still need skills. When I was counseling or coaching, most of my referrals came from medical doctors in Burlington who told me, Mike, I can give them pills, but they still have to learn how to manage their thoughts. And that's what I would do. The third reason we have anxiety and depression is environmental. The more stressful your environment, the more you're going to be anxious or depressed. And the fourth reason is personality traits. People with anxiety and depression are highly analytical. They have to figure everything out. They have to understand everything. The word that goes through the highly analytical mind is why. They're also obsessive thinkers. Their minds get stuck on a thought and they can't get off of it no matter how hard they try. They're also perfectionists. Any perfectionists here this morning? Your favorite song is I Did It My Way. You're the kind of person that if someone puts the dishes in the dishwasher the wrong way, you'll take them all back out again, put them back in the right way. Does anyone here have the toilet paper fetish? Do you know what that is? You go to your friend's house, you use the washroom, and the toilet paper's on the roll the wrong way. You take it off, you turn it around. Folks, you know what makes me anxious? When I go to my friend's house and I realize too late that there's no toilet paper. That makes me anxious. Perfectionism is not about being perfect. It's about control. Control is a very strange thing. When we try to control every detail of our lives, we feel utterly out of control. When we let our control go, we feel more in control. I have a saying that I teach people, let go and let God. We'll talk more about that. Serenity prayer. Dear Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I have a slight twist to the serenity prayer. Dear Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the person I cannot change, the courage to change the person that I can change, and the wisdom to know that that person that I can change is my spouse. No? Okay, I'm on my fourth marriage. Just kidding. Folks, you want a recipe for anxiety and stress? Try to control another human being, especially an adult. We do have to have some control over our children, I understand. But try to control another adult. That will make you anxious. The last trait that is common to anxious, depressed people is worry. I have never coached an anxious, depressed person who was not a worrier. Jesus had something to say about worry. Let me share it with you. Therefore, I tell you, Matthew 6:25, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds in the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Here's the kicker. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? There was a man named Epictetus. He was a first century philosopher. These were his words. There is only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about things which are beyond the power of our control. Worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it takes you nowhere. Worry is like paying the interest on a debt you may never owe. I love that. What is worry? It's obsessive, negative thinking. It's thinking negatively over and over and over about a specific situation. How many of you agree with this next statement? 90% of the things we worry about never actually happen. It's true, isn't it? It really is. But that means 10% will. Folks, I don't teach people to avoid their problems. I teach them to deal with them, but don't dwell on them. Deal with it, don't dwell on it. And I made a decision in 1991 when I recovered, because I was so devastated by worry and anxiety that I'd rather be sideswiped once in a while and caught off guard by the 10% that might actually happen than live my life worrying about the 90% that never will. I've not been caught off guard yet. I don't avoid my problems, I deal with them. And if you can't deal with it now, get out your smartphone, open your calendar, and write down when you can deal with it. And until then, let it go. And I'll teach you how to let it go in a few minutes. My grandmother was a warrior. When I was a child, there was no electricity. We didn't have light bulbs yet. How old do you think I am? No, when I was a child, we didn't have cell phones. So when I was a child, we'd go to my grandmother's house for dinner. Folks, I had the greatest grandmother. I really did. My sister and I were just talking about her. She died about 10 years ago. My sister and I were just talking about her recently. She was just so sweet. And we'd go to her house for dinner, and my family, when we would leave, we'd drive home, and we'd have to call her when we got home to let her know we got home safely. And she would worry from the time we left to the time we arrived home. Were we any safer because she was worried about us? Not at all. What did her worrying accomplish? Nothing, besides making her feel terrible. It is the greatest waste of thought, time, and energy known to the human race. And I'm going to teach you three techniques this morning on how to manage worry. Whether you have anxiety or depression or neither, we all worry from time to time. And that's why I'm picking this part out of my seminar this morning to focus on. The first technique, there's three techniques. The first technique is the three-step process. This three-step process was devised by an American living in China. He was a missionary. He was in his mid-30s, and he was arrested by the Chinese police and charged with being an American spy. If convicted, would spend the rest of his life in a Chinese prison. Folks, I've never been to a Chinese prison. I've never been to a Canadian prison, except for those 5 years they gave me for murder. But aside from that, sorry, did that come out? Did I actually say that? I've never been in a Canadian prison. But I'm going to guess that in Chinese prisons, I'm going to guess they don't have cable TV. I'm going to guess they don't have basketball courts, ping pong tables, weight rooms. I'm going to guess they have none of that. This man was facing life in a Chinese prison, and he was so sick from worry, he couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, and he felt like he was losing his mind. And I'll share with you the three techniques he came up with, the three-step technique to manage and get through this situation. Thankfully, he was found not guilty, sent back to America, and went on to live a healthy and happy life. First technique, first step. The worry we're going to look at this morning is worried about losing your job. Folks, we've all at some point in our life worried about losing a job. Jobs are very important. They pay bills. They put food on the table. They keep a roof over our heads. So, step one, what's the worst case scenario? What is the worst case scenario about losing your job? You lose your job. Are you going to die? No. Is your family going to abandon you? No. Are you eventually going to get another job? Yes. Has anyone ever lost their job in history before you and lived to tell the tale? Yeah. Many. It's interesting, we think of losing a job as a bad thing. Lee Iacocca didn't think of it as a bad thing. Lee Iacocca was a vice president for Ford. Under his leadership, they came up with the Ford Mustang, one of the most iconic North American cars ever built. He was a hero. 3 years later, he came up with another car that didn't go so well, the Ford Pinto. The Pinto had a slight problem. When you rear-ended it, it blew up. It was a nightmare for Ford, probably the biggest scar they've ever experienced as a company. Hank Ford was Henry Ford's grandson and the president of Ford. Because of the Pinto, he fired Lee Iacocca. Lee Iacocca was out of work for a while. Eventually got hired by Chrysler. Eventually became their president and CEO. Lee Iacocca is credited by people in the financial world as saving Chrysler from bankruptcy. Under his leadership, they came up with the minivan and the K-car. The minivan. Who here has ever owned a minivan? Yeah. I knew I was a dad when I bought my first minivan. I thought, here we go. I'm buying minivans. This is so attractive. Anyway, so Lee Iacocca will tell you the best thing Ford ever did was fire him, because he was never going to be the president of Ford, because his last name was not spelled F-O-R-D. So what's the worst case scenario? Stare the worst case scenario in the face. Second step, mentally accept the worst case scenario. What does that mean? I want you to become so comfortable with the worst case scenario that you don't even care if it happens. I want you to go to work tomorrow and not care if you lose your job. Now, why in the world would I tell you to do that? Ever heard the term self-fulfilling prophecy? Do you know that worrying about losing your job can increase the odds of losing your job? Why would that be? Think of the state of mind and emotional state of someone worried about losing their job when they go to work. They're fearful, they're lacking confidence, they're distracted, they have poor concentration, they're afraid of making a mistake. When you can mentally accept the worst case scenario, what happens is the fear goes away. The worry goes away. Your concentration comes back. Your confidence comes back. Third step, do everything in your power to prevent the worst case scenario. Go to work with good concentration, self-confidence, and do the best job you possibly can, which lowers the odds of you losing your job. That is a three-step process I have used in my life many times, and it works. What's the worst case scenario? Mentally accept it. Do everything in your power to prevent it. It's not the only technique I use, though. The second technique I'm going to teach you is the oldest technique known to the human race. People have been using this technique for thousands of years. It is prayer. A study was done by a university in the United States. They wanted to study the effects of prayer. They were a non-religious university, secular, and they were curious about the effects of prayer. So they studied a whole bunch of people who did and didn't pray over a long period of time. Do you know what they found? People who prayed on a daily basis had a lower incidence of stress, anxiety, and depression than people who didn't pray on a daily basis. We all know as believers that prayer works. Somebody clinically proved it. Why does prayer work? Because you're giving your worry over to a being that is greater than your worry. You will never have a worry that is too big for God. Is that a fair statement? Absolutely. The second reason worry works, or sorry, Freudian slip. The second reason prayer works is you're giving it away. So the first reason is God is real and He answers prayer. The second reason is you're giving it away. And that's great, but here's the problem. And we've all done this. I know I have. Have you ever prayed about something? And then 5 minutes later, you took it back again and started worrying about it again? I've done that. Let me teach you how to pray, give your worry to God, and walk away from it. Be free from it. The third technique, don't entertain it. What does that mean? What does it mean to entertain? To invite, to welcome, to host, to serve. Don't entertain your worries. And that sounds difficult. Well, we all agreed that 90% of the things we worry about never happen. Okay? How do you stop thinking about something? The natural human reaction to worry is to try to not think of it. I want you all to not think of a pink elephant. Stop thinking of pink elephants. I told you not to think of a pink elephant. How many of you for at least a second thought of a pink elephant? It's exactly what we do, is we try to not think of what is bothering us. It doesn't work. It's all we can think about. Do you know how you stop thinking of pink elephants? You start thinking of blue rhinoceroses. Big, fat, blue rhinoceros standing by the edge of a riverbank drinking water. I guarantee you, you're no longer thinking of pink elephants. It's called a distraction. And it's a very powerful tool for worry. Again, if your worry is real and needs dealing with it, go deal with it immediately. Procrastination is painful. Go headlong into it and deal with it. But if it's of the 90%, the what ifs, give it to God, focus on something else, and let it go away. You can't make a worry go away. You can only let it go away by focusing on something else. One of the best ways to distract yourself is to focus on your five senses. I remember when I was getting better, I was about a month and a half into the program, I was standing in the shower and an obsessive thought hit me. I thought, okay, I'm going to try this five senses thing. As I was having a shower, I thought, okay, what do I hear? I hear the sound of water hitting my back and falling to the bottom of the bathtub. What do I see? I see tiles and the bottom of the bathtub and water. What do I taste? I taste the orange juice I had for breakfast. What do I feel? I feel my arm as I wash it. What do I smell? I took the soap and I ran it through my hands. And I smelled the soap. By the time I was done, I had forgotten what I was worried about. I actually recommend, if you're going to do that, to find two things for each of your five senses. At this point, I'm going to quickly take an offering, and I'll explain why. I don't charge churches to come and speak, and I also have a ministry that I support, and 30% of what you put in the offering goes to them. It's the Damazenod Door in downtown Hamilton. It's a ministry out of St. Patrick's Parish. They feed 400 people a day, 365 days a year. They have over 100 volunteers. They are in the worst part of Hamilton, and it is God reaching His hand out to the hungry. So 30% of what you put in that basket, I give to them. The other 70% covers my costs and such for coming. So I'll just keep speaking while that passes around. Thank you very much for what you put in there. I want to share a couple of scriptures with you. When I was struggling with anxiety, I believed that my anxiety was actually a punishment from God for my sin. That's what I believed. And I'm here to tell you, if you feel anxious, it's never from God. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and of sound mind. That's what God gives, not anxiety. Love, power, and of sound mind. Here's another scripture. There's a whole seminar in this one scripture. Be anxious for nothing, is what God says. I'll say it again. Anxiety is never from God. Be anxious for nothing, but in all things, through prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, make your requests known to God, and the peace of God that transcends all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Who here has ever experienced the peace of God? It is the most wonderful thing on earth. And we can have peace of God because Christ died on the cross for us. I'm reading a book right now that's had a profound effect on me. I've lived my life afraid of God. I was raised in an environment, a church environment that was very fear-based. And I always believed I wasn't good enough for God. I kept soldiering on, but that was my feeling. I read a book recently, and if you struggle with God's love or acceptance, I encourage you to get this book. You can't buy it in Canada. You can get it through Amazon. It's called Living the Better Covenant. And it changed my life. Understanding that we are under grace, that God is not angry at anyone. We are living in the dispensation of grace. God is not even angry at those who don't accept Him. And when we give our lives to Christ, we have eternal security in that, when the Spirit of God enters our soul. And you will be changed. And this book really had an effect on me. I am no longer afraid of God. I am deeply in love with Him, like I never have been in my life, because of reading this book. So I recommend if you struggle with those things. Now it says with thanksgiving. What does that mean? Why would the author just drop in the middle of that scripture with thanksgiving? Do you know that you can't be thankful and depressed at the same time? Do you know that thankfulness is the ultimate in positive thinking? I'm going to encourage you to start a thankfulness journal or a gratitude journal. Go to a dollar store and buy a little, what do you call them, exercise book. It's a little book with pages, blank pages in it. Put the date and write 10 things you're thankful for. Do it every day. Why write it down? It has more effect on you when you write it down than if you just think about it. If you think you can't find 10 things to be thankful for, a lady just wrote a book, title of the book, 14,000 Things to Be Thankful For. 14,000. The book is nothing but a list of 14,000 things to be thankful for. I think we can come up with 10. Do you know that we live in one of the greatest countries in the world? Do you know that? Do you know that if you're in this country and you are on welfare, you are better off than about a third of the world? We are blessed to live here, folks. And we have a whole lot more than 10 things to be thankful for. I drive a 10-year-old Toyota Highlander with 335,000 kilometers on it. And I thank the Lord every day I get in it that I have a car to drive. Thankfulness is an attitude of gratitude. And if you adopt it, it will change your life. You said I can go till 2, right, Chris? Okay. I'm going to sum up. Folks, I wish I had more time. My seminar is typically an hour and a half, but I don't want to keep you more than you're used to. 5 years ago, I wrote CDs. Why CDs? To get better from anxiety or depression, you need to understand the skills, but understanding them will not make you better. You have to do the skills. And the only way that's going to happen is through what is called repetition. Repetition is the mother of excellence. The cassette program I went through never left my car. Whenever I got in my car, I put a cassette on. I listened to each of those cassettes 3 to 4 times. Why? At the 3rd to 4th time listening to something, you're at about a 60% retention level. When you get to that 60% retention level, what happens is you find yourself using the skills without even having to tell yourself to do it. Your mind remembers them when you need them. And that's why I wrote CDs and not a book. The CDs I have, this is a 4-CD set called Soaring Above Anxiety and Depression. It teaches the skills to manage anxiety and depression, some of which I talked about this morning, many of which I didn't. Okay, this here is called Soaring Above Stress, 6 CDs. Unmanaged stress can become anxiety or depression. Dozens of skills to lower your stress. Stress is an epidemic, folks. We live in a very stressful world. On both of these CDs, there is a relaxation CD. They're different. There's 2 different ones. Most people get both sets, and I'll explain why in a moment. The relaxation CDs are very important. Basically, it's about 10 minutes long. It's some really nice instrumental music that our worship leader did for me, teaching you how to relax your mind and body. It's not weird. It's not New Age. I don't use crystals. It's just literally how to focus on something that is comforting to you. Visualization is a big thing for anxious, depressed people. Folks, we visualize all the time. It really bothers me that the New Age movement made visualization weird. Whenever a human being has a picture of something in their mind, they are visualizing. What I teach is how to visualize things that make you feel comforted, safe, and positive, versus visualizing things that make you feel negative, fearful, and overwhelmed. And I teach that on the relaxation CD. Somewhere between 10 to 15 times listening to the relaxation CD, what will happen is you will learn what's called the relaxation response. And when you're out in the community doing your day, and you start to feel a little anxious, you'll notice that your body starts to automatically breathe deeper. And your mind focuses on something pleasant to you. And that will happen automatically after listening to the relaxation CD between 10 and 15 times. Okay? To purchase the CDs for both sets through my office, they're $150. At my seminar, they are $80. That includes tax. 10 CDs for $80. If you purchase them and you have someone else you know who has anxiety or depression, you have my permission to burn them. I want to help as many people as possible. Burn 2 or 3 copies. Give them to people you know. Folks, I will never reach anything more than 0.00001% of the Canadian population. A man called me up. He said, Mike, I purchased your CDs. My daughter lives in Winnipeg. She has anxiety. Can I copy them for her? And I said, sir, I'm never going to Winnipeg. You can copy them as much as you'd like. To purchase them, I do not take credit cards or Interac. You can pay for them by check, cash, or e-transfer. Okay? And bottom line is, folks, it's an affordable way to gain control of thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Does anyone have any questions? Okay, well, thank you for coming, and well, you came to your church. Thanks for coming to your church. And I tell you, you are a brave bunch. When I was driving here this morning, up the 401, I thought to myself, should I even keep going? There's going to be two people here this morning. You really surprised me, because it is greasy out. That was the word shared with me by my friend. It is slippery. And you are a brave bunch for coming on out. I overheard a young man say earlier, we'll find out who the real Christians are. Thank you, folks.
Thanks, Mike. We'll have the worship team come up. And I'm glad you did show up. I would have hated to have to freestyle a sermon up here today. So thank you so much, Mike. And I'll have the worship team ready to go, and let's sing together.